So I was almost 16 years old, and I was excited to get my driver's license. Any of you guys ever been excited to get your driver's license? Yeah? Well, this particular day, it was my turn to drive, and I'm in the front seat. My friends are in the back seat. The instructor is in the passenger seat next to me, and I'm driving down Main Street. And Main Street in our town had two lanes going one way and two lanes coming the other way, and a boulevard down the center. And I needed to turn left. So I'm at a light. I'm in the left lane. I got my blinker on. Light's red, and I'm waiting for the light to turn. And I'm feeling kind of confident, too. I'm like, I can do this. I got this. I don't need anybody's help, right? Light turns green. I pull out into the intersection, and I wait for traffic to clear. Traffic looks good, so I start my left turn. And I'm turning and turning. And then, boom! The instructor slams on the brake on his side of the car. It's kind of one of those weird cars, right, for learning how to drive. And my heart is, like, pounding. And he just starts cussing at me. And he's like, bleep, 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 are you trying to get us all killed? And I didn't see that a city bus had pulled off the curb and was coming right for us. And the dude pretty much saved us big time. And I am completely embarrassed and freaking out, but I still have to drive. The bus clears, and I'm, like, shaking, and we pull and do our left turn, and my heart is pounding inside my chest. And I learned this important lesson that day about yielding to traffic. Yeah. And that my failure to yield almost got my friends and I hurt. And that was scary. You ever been overconfident and your overconfidence got in the way? For me, it happened that day. And in a similar way, sometimes we go through life without yielding. And at times we plow like full steam ahead. We think we know what we want. We think we know where we're going. And we go for it without considering God's direction in our life. We forget to rely on Him. And we often pay the price for not yielding to Christ in our life. So this morning, I want to talk to you about these three words, basically. Rely on God. If you forget everything else I talk about this morning, I want you to remember those three words. Rely on God. And I think from the middle school girl in seventh grade to the grandparent who's 70 years old, I think we could all grab a hold of this one concept, that in our lives, in our decision-making, we need to rely on God. So we're going to break this down a little bit, okay? RELY means this. It's an acronym. It means rethink independence, express humility, listen, and yield to God. And that's where we're going this morning. We're going to hit on all four of those points. So let's take a closer look at this first one. You know, we spend a large part of our lives trying to be independent. In fact, we just celebrated Independence Day as a country, right? 4th of July. But as children, we often whine and complain. I want to do it myself. You ever had a child do that? You want to help them tie their shoe or they can't brush their teeth or whatever, and they just, no, I want to do it myself. They want to be independent. As teenagers, I think we often long for independence and we look forward to being out on our own. We don't always like being under mom and dad, and we're stretching our wings a bit and we want to be our own person. I think as adults, we're encouraged to be independent thinkers and to rely on ourselves a lot of the time. And then even as we age, I think the elderly reluctantly give up their independence as their health begins to fail and they can't do as much. And this independence thing is something we really, really, really hold on to and want. But here's the strange thing, that we really were not made to be independent creatures. In fact, God made us to be dependent on Him. And sometimes that rubs us the wrong way, and it's hard to do. But here's the problem, that living and acting independently of God is wrong. So let's take a look at the book of Joshua. If you've got a Bible, go ahead and pull it out, or a device that you want to read it on. Joshua chapter 9 is where we're going to be. And let's find out what God has to say about our independence. You know, as we come to Joshua 9, Joshua and the Israelites have begun their conquest of the promised land. And with the Lord's help, they've conquered Jericho, Ai. They've dealt with sin in the camp. They've renewed their vows to the Lord. And seemingly, they look like they're ready to continue their conquest. Except for this morning, we're going to find out that they hit a snag. And this snag is going to take the form of a deception. So follow with me, if you would, in Joshua 9, starting in verse 1, we'll read through 15. It says, "Now all the kings of the west of the Jordan heard about what had happened. These were the kings of the Hittites, Amorites, Canaanites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites who lived in the hill country, in the western foothills and along the coast of the Mediterranean Sea, as far north as the Lebanon Mountains. And these kings quickly combined their armies to fight against Joshua and the Israelites. But when the people of Gibeon heard what had happened to Jericho and Ai, they resorted to deception to save themselves. They sent ambassadors to Joshua, loading their donkeys with weathered saddlebags and old patched wineskins. They put on ragged clothes and worn out patched sandals, and they took along dry moldy bread for provisions. And when they arrived at the camp of Israel in Gilgal, they told Joshua and the men of Israel, 'We have come from a distant land to ask you to make a peace treaty with us.' The Israelites replied to these Hivites, 'How do we know you don't live nearby? For if you do, we cannot make a treaty with you.' And they replied, 'We will be your servants.' 'But who are you?' Joshua demanded. 'And where do you come from?' In verse 9, they answered, 'We are from a very distant country. We have heard of the might of the Lord of your God and all he did in Egypt. We've also heard what he did to the two Amorite kings east of the Jordan River, King Sihon and Heshbon and King Og of Bashan, who lived in Ashtoreth.' In verse 11, 'So our leaders and our people instructed us, prepare for a long journey, go meet with the people of Israel and declare our people to be their servants and ask for peace. This bread was hot from our ovens when we left, but now, as you can see, it is dry and moldy. And these wineskins were new when we filled them, but now they're old and cracked. And our clothing and sandals are worn out from our long, hard trip.' In verse 14, 'So the Israelite leaders examined their bread, but they did not consult the Lord. And then Joshua went ahead and signed a peace treaty with them, and the leaders of Israel ratified their agreement with a binding oath.'" Do you guys get what happened? In the region, kings were uniting as a big army to fight Joshua. But one group, the Gibeonites, decide, you know what? I don't know if we can win in battle. So they decide they're going to go ahead and trick the Israelites and try to get them to sign a peace treaty. Here's the deal. Joshua should have known better, and his leaders should have known better. And just to take clothes and wineskins and this moldy bread and food as evidence, perhaps they should have done more. But their biggest misstep that you're going to find is the verse 14 and 15 where it talked about this. So the Israelite leaders examined their bread, but they did not consult the Lord. Then Joshua went ahead and signed a peace treaty with them, and the leaders of Israel ratified their agreement with a binding oath. So have you ever done that? Ever made a decision without consulting the Lord? I think we all probably already have. And depending on what size of a decision was, a small or a medium or a large decision, could have bigger and bigger consequences, right? So here's the deal. The Israelites just can't seem to get things right. You know, they continue this cycle of making mistakes and not following God, and then they repent, and then they try to follow God, and then they have some success, and then they fall away again. You know, Joshua's got his hands full trying to lead this military campaign to conquer the promised land. But it also reminds me of a section in James that says this, in James 4, 13 to 14. "Now listen, you who say, 'Today or tomorrow we will go to this or that city, spend a year there, carry on business, and make money.'" Okay, Joshua's talking to these business-minded people. He says, "Why? You do not even know what will happen tomorrow. What is your life? You are a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes." You know, James goes on and he calls our independent living sin. And in verse 16, he says, "As it is, you boast and brag, and all such boasting is evil." You know, he's talking to these business-minded people who are arrogant and feel like they know what's going on, and they're making plans, but they're not considering what God would have them do. All right, so what about us today? In what ways do people live independently of God? Think about that for a minute. In what ways do people live independently of God? I wrote down a few things. People don't share. They don't care, and they don't show love. Perhaps they're selfish or rude or manipulative or mean or vengeful. Maybe they're full of pride or dishonest, greedy or self-reliant. Or they just flat out make choices that just please themselves. They don't consider the effect on others and those around them. When we act independently, God's like, look, that's not right. I need you to depend on me and rely on me. All right, here's another question for you. How does our desire for independence conflict with God's design? Think about that. How has God designed us to be? And then how does our desire to pursue independence conflict with that? Well, a lot of times people just want to be the master of their own destiny, right? They don't want to rely on anyone. They don't want to, they just want to go where they want to go. They want to do what they want to do, and they want to be in control. Well, here's an example. Maybe you can't quite grab that, but picture this. Picture if you were on a sports team and you didn't listen to the coach or depend on your teammates, is your team going to get very far? Probably not. You might win some games, but you may not win championships. It takes a fair amount of teamwork to work to accomplish something like that. If you're not listening to the coach and you don't rely on your teammates, it's going to be hard to be successful as a team for the long term. Ever had a ball hog or somebody just tries to do it all themselves, or one superstar on the team who tries to do everything? We don't have that, do we? No, not at all. But here's the thing, and that's sports. But in life, do we act like that too? Do we just hold the ball and don't give it to anyone else, or don't allow God to be our coach? All right, so rethinking independence, that's our first point here. It can be a difficult process, but a healthy one as we seek to rely on God. All right, so let's move to the next one. This is E, to express humility. And I'm sure for most of you, humility is just a natural emotion that just comes out of you. And you love being humble, right? It's so fun to be low, right? No, people want to be high. They want to be on top. They want to be the best. They want to feel like they're the best. And if you're like me, humility doesn't come naturally. And most of the time, we think we're right. And we think we know what we're doing. And we often don't like to ask for help, or we pretend that we don't need help. And this whole idea of control. All right, so let's go back to our story about Joshua and the Israelites. All right, so if you would, pick up with me in chapter 9, verse 15. Oh, sorry, verse 16. We'll begin there. Okay, so 3 days later, if you're following, the facts came out. These people of Gibeon lived nearby. The Israelites set out at once to investigate and reached the towns in 3 days. The names of these towns were Gibeon, Kephira, Beeroth, and Kiriath-Jearim. But the Israelites did not attack the towns, for their leaders had made a vow to the Lord, the God of Israel. The people of Israel grumbled against their leaders because of the treaty. But the leaders replied, "We have sworn an oath in the presence of the Lord, the God of Israel. We cannot touch them." And I've lost my place. That's not good. Somebody help me out. What verse are we on? 20, thank you. We must let them live, for the God would be angry with us if we broke our oath. Let them live, but we will make them chop the wood and carry the water for the entire community. So the Israelites kept their promise to the Gibeonites. Verse 22, but Joshua called together the Gibeonite leaders and said, "Why did you lie to us? Why did you say that you live in a distant land when you live right here among us? May you be cursed, and from now on you will chop wood and carry the water for the house of my God." And they replied, "We did it because we were told that the Lord your God instructed his servant Moses to conquer this entire land and destroy all the people living in it. So we feared for our lives because of you, and that is why we have done it. And now we are at your mercy. Do whatever you think is right." In verse 26, Joshua did not allow the people of Israel to kill them. But that day, he made the Gibeonites the woodchoppers and water carriers for the people of Israel and for the altar of the Lord, and wherever the Lord would choose to build it. And that arrangement continues to this day. So why is it a big deal that Joshua spared their lives? Why is it a big deal that the army didn't wipe out this whole city? Well, there's some natural consequences that I think come out of this. You know, Joshua and his leaders made a mistake in trusting the Gibeonites and not consulting God. And they acted arrogantly and independently. And perhaps they just forgot. You know, he'd been doing a good job. I think Joshua is a cool leader. I think he does really well. This may not be one of their brighter moments. But in this process, other things happen too. And in reality, the Gibeonites end up losing their freedom. They end up becoming slaves to Israel. Now, being a slave is better than being dead, right? So I don't really have a whole lot of compassion for them, except to say that there are some major consequences that happen. So let's take a look. Up here on the screen, we have some consequences of the treaty. This first one is, well, they disobeyed God. You know, they were supposed to wipe him out. That was one of the cities, one of the regions that they were supposed to take and capture. The second one, they have an extra burden on them now. The Israelites are now responsible for the Gibeonites. The third one here is that there's grumbling among the people. All of a sudden now, the people are starting to question their leaders and doubt their leadership, and the people just want to kill them anyway. The fourth one is that they have less land and resources. They're supposed to conquer the promised land and then divide it up among all the tribes. So now there's going to be less land to divvy out, less resources to hand out to God's people. And the last one I think is kind of interesting. I mean, it's just my speculation. But what would happen when you've got a group of people they were supposed to wipe out that live, they have their own culture and their own background and their own gods and their own ways of living? I think this possible corruption could happen. Where now you've got this intermixing of the Israelites and the Gibeonites, and are they going to continue to follow God? If you look at other stories in the Bible where Israelite mixes life and culture and even marriage with other groups, a lot of times they end up falling away from God. I think that's a possible thing. When they mix their beliefs and cultures, it's possible that could happen. All right, so let's look back at the book of James. He gives us some advice here on a solution to maybe some of our selfish living. In verse 15, it says, instead, you ought to say, if it is the Lord's will, we will live and do this or that. This idea of being humble, of surrendering your plans and your desires to God. Say, hey, God, what do you think of this idea? God, would it be okay if we did this? God, give me wisdom. Show me how you want me to live. And bring that kind of under his authority. You know, there's a famous section in Scripture that you might know well in Proverbs 3. It says, trust in the Lord with all your heart and do not depend on your own understanding. And that's the hard part, right? Not depending on your own understanding, on your own way of thinking. And seek his will in all you do, and he will direct your paths. All right, so what about us today? What does it look like to be humble, to have some humility? So how do people depend on God in their everyday life? How about you? How do you express humility toward God at work or at home or at school or in your neighborhood? What does it look like to move through your life with some humility? I think that's kind of tough, but maybe it involves a lot of prayer. And maybe it involves a lot of seeking God. Maybe it involves you humbling yourself and getting some wise counsel from some trusted Christian friends. More specifically, maybe before you go to that movie, or before you decide to date that person, or before you put on that outfit, or before you take that job, before you buy that car, or choose that college, or pick that investment option, that you humble yourself and you ask God for direction, for advice. Here's another twist. Joshua and his leaders were deceived. So here's the question for you. How have you been deceived by the world? How have you been deceived by the ways of our culture? I think that's a tougher one to answer. You know, for me personally, last summer, we were trying to buy a home, and it's been a difficult journey. We looked at over 50 houses and tried to buy three of them, and none of them worked out. The first house we put an offer on, it went into contract several hours before they got our offer. Liked the house, put in the offer, boom, sorry, it's already been taken. The second house we found had a great layout. It was nice and open, had a cool kitchen and a fun living room, and that one didn't work out. We're running out of time. Our house is on the market, and we're looking at a third house. We got excited about this one. We met with our cell group. We prayed about this one. Our kids were excited about it, had cool spaces for everybody, and we were really, really got our hopes up. This house was on the market. Somebody else had it in contract, came back on the market, and we were just really excited, and we've been praying about it with our group, and so we put an offer on it. And they accepted the offer. We moved ahead. We had the inspection done. And when the inspection came back, there were some things wrong with it that we weren't pleased about. It had some water leaking in the basement. There were some structural issues with the roof. There were some other issues with appliances and things. And by the time we got done, we're just like, you know what? this is not going to work. And we walked away from that home feeling like God was going to provide this one. And we were out of time. Our house sold and we had to move. And so last July, we moved into an apartment, put all of our stuff into storage. And I was devastated because my kids had their hopes up. My wife had her hopes. We were all excited. It was our last chance for us to get into a home before the school year began. And we didn't want to have to switch neighborhoods, and we're trying to figure out, you know, where our kids are going to go to school. And so we're trying to do this, rely on God's stuff. And, you know, we're trying to be humble, and we're trying to surrender to Him, and we're trying to make sure we're giving to God financially, we're giving it to Him in our cell group, trying to serve and do everything we felt like the Bible was asking us to do. And it didn't work out like we wanted. And I was upset and angry, and it was difficult, and it wiped me out. I was like, I can't look at houses anymore right now. So we took a couple months off. We're just like, look, forget it. So we had to move ahead with a new school district. We had to move ahead with the apartment. And, you know, we can't find our stuff. We're looking for the barbecue tongs, and they're buried in some back box in the back of the thing. We're looking for bikes or Legos or whatever it might be. I can't find my boots. It's winter time coming, and now we can't find our winter clothes because it's stacked, you know, 25 deep in the back of the storage unit. And I'm scratching my head like, wow, relying on God kind of stinks. And this is really hard. And it didn't work out. So I'm going to get up here and talk to these guys. And I'm like, I hated relying on God last year. You guys feel me? Right? So this verse pops in my head last year while we're going through all this. Proverbs 19. Many are the plans of a man's heart, but it's the Lord's purpose that prevails. Man, we had plans. We had good plans. And we had given ourselves buffer to make it all work. And it all went to whatever. But you know what? In the middle of all of it, a fourth house came along. Last December, 2 weeks before Christmas, God provided an awesome home for us. It went on the market the day it came on the market. I mean, I don't know if you guys know, the housing market last year was insane. Like, people were lining up. It was nuts. The day it came on the market, we put a bid on it. And then 7 bids came in after ours. And they were going to start like this bidding war. And thankfully, praise the Lord, they accepted our offer, and we got the home, and we moved in. And the first thing we did was put up the Christmas tree with no ornaments because we couldn't find them. And we just lived in boxes. And at that point, it was like, we didn't even want to move in. We just wanted to collapse and be like, oh, we finally have a place to call home. You know, and I'm feeling like a failure as a husband and a father. I can't get a home for our family. And my youngest son's like, man, you guys stink at buying houses. And we're like, no kidding. It's unreal. Yeah, from the heart of a child, right? All right, so as we work on this idea of humility, that was a hard one for me. We also need to do this, to listen. And I think listening is challenging. I'm good at talking, not so much at listening. And I think Joshua needed to do this with his leaders as well, is to listen to the Lord. You know, Joshua listens and seeks God a lot. In his journey, you know, he takes the leadership reins of Moses and he listens, and they go and they cross the Jordan River, and he's listening and following God, and they fight the Battle of Jericho, which was a little crazy, sending out the parade of people that we've won the battle and marching around the city, doing battle in a strange way. He does it anyway. The walls collapse. They go in. But this time with the Gibeonites, he forgets or neglects to consider what the Lord would have them do. I mean, how easy is it that to do? You get on a good rhythm and you're leaning on God, you're leaning on God, you're leaning on God, and then you're like, no, I'm going to do this for myself. And then you're like, holy cow, that turned out really bad. And you realize how important it is to listen. Here's what Proverbs says about listening. Listen to advice and accept instruction, and in the end, you will be wise. And then chapter 23, listen, my son, and be wise, and keep your heart on the right path. And because listening is so hard, I think we need a visual aid. So we're going to play a little game called Minefield. These orange cones are the mines, and if you touch them, you blow up. Okay, it's pretty simple. We were on a mission project this past week in Cincinnati, and we played this game as a team-building exercise with our group. And the fun part was we all laughed and had a good time. The sad part is someone actually got hurt doing it because it takes a bit of listening and teamwork, right? Okay. So I have a few volunteers I've pre-selected, so don't get too nervous. Okay? All right, I'm going to invite Devin and Isaac to come on up here. All right, Dev, you are going to be blindfolded. Okay? So you might want to hand your glasses off there to Owen. And Isaac, you have to coach him through the minefield without blowing him up. Okay? I know it'd be fun to watch him blow up, but I don't want you to do that. So, Dev, we're going to put this blindfold on you. Okay? And then we're going to spin you around as well, just to get it a little more fun and confusing. Okay, here we go. 1, 2, 3. Okay, we're going to put you right there. Okay, Isaac, your job is to not touch him, but just give him verbal instructions, okay? Like take 2 steps forward or move to the left, move to the right. Are you with me? You want to get him to kind of do this, right? And get through all the way over to me, all right? Is that cool? Devin, are you ready to listen? Isaac, are you ready to coach him? All right, go ahead. He's getting into... Oh, boom. All right, that was a nice try. All right, you can peek now. Okay. All right, Isaac sent you right through the mines. It was awesome. All right, we're going to let you reset. Okay, we're going to put you right here. There you go. Okay. So maybe get him to turn a little bit, okay? Here's the fun part where the audience is going to get to participate now, okay? It would be nice if life was organized like a maze, but it's not. And so as an audience, you are going to get to yell wrong instructions, okay? Because we're talking about the value of listening, right? And so Devin is going to have to really, really concentrate on Isaac's voice, okay? And see what we can do. Isaac, are you ready to talk loudly or, you know, help Devin? Okay. All right. Let me try this again. Okay, audience, are you ready? Some of you are really excited because you like to be devious. Okay, we're going to do this again. Woo! 1, 2, 3. There you go. That's it. That's it. All right, Isaac. I hope you're ready. And go. All right, you made it. You made it. Good job. Woo! All right, thanks, guys. You can have a seat. That was awesome. Okay, how many of you enjoyed giving wrong directions? Like, that was great. All right, isn't that like life, though? I mean, how hard is it to hear God's voice when the world is yelling at you? Right? The world can be super loud, and it's very hard to be still and to hear the voice of God. All right, so what about you? Why is it hard to listen to God sometimes? Are you guys hot? I feel like I'm just sweating like crazy up here. Pardon me. Yeah, so why is it so hard to rely on God sometimes? Well, sometimes we just can't hear him. We don't take the time to listen. Or when we do listen, we hear our own advice and not the word of God. So have you ever listened to wrong advice? Made a misstep? Maybe you listened to the wrong voices in your life. Well, let me invite you back and say, you know what? Listen to the voice of God and start doing that even today. You know, not only buying a home was difficult, but for me... We had a difficult year of health problems in our personal family, myself and my immediate family and my extended family as well. And maybe you're sitting there and you've got some test results you're waiting on, or you've got an issue that you're not sure about, or you've got a friend or a family member who's been to the doctor or in the hospital or has some condition. I find it really, really hard. But that's where I'm living right now, is trying to rely on God when the health of the people I care about is uncertain. All right, so you guys remember my close encounter with the bus, right? And the importance of yielding to traffic? Well, here's the last point, is this: to yield to God. And I put the traffic sign up there just to remind you. As you're driving this week and you see one of those, to remember, hey, not only yield to traffic, but yield to God in your life. You know, Joshua and his leaders have shown great resolve. They have trusted God on many occasions, but however, they failed to yield to God in regard to the Gibeonites, in part because of the Gibeonites' deception. But here's the thing. God doesn't allow the deception to be an excuse. That you need to continually be on your guard anyway. There's a great verse, I would almost call it my life verse. 1 Corinthians 16:13-14. Share this with my boys, and we do this over the summer together. Close to my heart is this verse. It says, "Be on your guard, stand firm in the faith, be men of courage, be strong, and do everything in love." And this idea that deception is not an excuse, that we've got to be on our guard anyway. So how do you seek God and yield to God? How do you yield to God? It's by seeking him. There's a cool verse in Psalms that says, "My heart says of you, seek his face. Your face, Lord, I will seek." And I would love that to be true for me more often, and true for you as well. Here's another one in Psalm that says this: "Oh God, you are my God. I earnestly search for you. My soul thirsts for you. My whole body longs for you in this parched and weary land where there is no water." You know, David's got a passion for God that sometimes I wish I had. You know, he has his shortcomings as well, but in the Psalms, you really feel his heart. To really go after God that way in our decision-making would be huge. So do you ever wonder if you're making the right decisions? I do. And I think there's a funny section of a movie I wanted to share with you. I just wanted to tell you about it. I don't know if you've seen the movie Sahara. But it stars Matthew McConaughey as a guy named Dirk, and Steve Zahn as a guy named Al, and Penelope Cruz plays the part of Eva. And Al and Dirk are like ex-Navy guys, and they're working for a salvage group called NUMA. And along the way, with the help of Eva, they discover that there's a plague outbreak in Mali. So as they're going along, it's kind of this hilarious scene. They're all riding camels in the desert, and they've got like towels wrapped around their heads, and they're looking for a boat in the middle of the desert. If you know anything about boats, don't usually find them in the desert. Okay, so Al is riding his camel, and he's like, "Yo, Dirk," and this is what he says. He says, "Well, we're in the desert looking for the source of a river pollutant, using as our map a cave drawing of a Civil War gunship, which is also in the desert. So I was just wondering when we're going to have to sit down and reevaluate our decision-making paradigm." And it just makes me chuckle. I'm like, he's like, "Dude, we got a cave drawing in the middle of the desert looking for a boat, riding camels. Like, how did our life get so bad that we ended up here?" And I think sometimes God might look down at us and say, "You know what, you guys? You're holding a stinking cave drawing, and you think you know where you're going, but why don't you rely on me? Because I can see the whole thing, and I can help you." You know, like the guys in the movie, I would say that we need a new paradigm, a new decision-making paradigm. So I didn't want today just to be all mental. I actually wanted it to be super practical for you, so you could walk away being like, "All right, this week, how could I make better choices?" Well, here's some steps that I think you could follow. This is just a model. It's not the only model, but it is one that I feel like is good. Mark Matlock, in his book, Wisdom on Making Good Decisions, says, or this is kind of adapted from that. So what do I do? Well, first you stop, which is kind of unnatural, because you usually want to get momentum and keep going. But you need to stop and take time to make a wise choice. So have you ever made an impulsive choice? How about like those candy bars at the checkout aisle? You didn't go to the store to get one, but they're there, so you might as well just throw it on the belt and buy it and eat it, right? I'm hungry, I'll have a snack. Or there's a magazine, there's a kit of Legos, there's some lip balm or whatever, you know, they call them impulse items, right? Ever been shopping on Amazon or whatever, and you're like, you know, you go for what you want, and then they got a list. Here's 25 other things you might like, because you can't live without them. And so you click on one, and before you know it, your cart's full of crap. I mean, just to be honest. And you're like, what am I doing? I just spent $100, and I meant to spend 20. But you get the idea, right? Stop and take time to make a logical choice, a choice that's not hasty. Step two would be to gather information. Do a little bit of research, okay? Find out a little bit more. Maybe you make a list of like pros and cons. You find out, all right, I like this car and I like this car. Maybe you compare them. Or I like this house and I like this house. Or I like these two colleges. All right, here's two movies I could go to. All right, you guys get the idea. Here's step three. Ask questions and consider the consequences. Like, how big is the decision? All right, should I have corn or broccoli with my dinner? You know, I'm not sure that Jesus is going to, like, you know, I don't think you're going to screw that one up big time, okay? Unless you're, like, allergic to one of them, and that's your own fault. But you get the idea, right? But if it's a bigger choice, that it can have an effect. But the idea is this, to build a pattern in your life where you're relying on God in your choices. And its effect on people, all right? You ask questions, consider the consequences, its effect on other people. If I do this, how does this affect my family? How does it affect my friends? How does it affect me? And kind of walk down that road. Step four, evaluate your motives. Now, we don't know Joshua's motives and his leader's motives in this, but I feel like Joshua did 1, 2, 3, and possibly 4 pretty good. He asked questions. They kind of grilled these guys. They tried to, you know, make their a good choice, but they stopped and didn't go to step 5. Which is to seek God's guidance, to pray, to read the Bible, to look in the index of your Bible and find a topic that might fit with what you're going through, to talk to your cell group, to find some trusted Christian people in your life. Hey, here's what I'm considering. You know, what do you think about this? To get some godly counsel, and then to give it up. Be like, all right, I'm going to go to the altar, and I'm going to be like, all right, Jesus, here's my decision, or here's the thing that I want. Here's my desire. I'm going to put it at your feet. Now help me and guide me in that. And then, you know, the last part, then be free. If you've done 1 through 5, then be free and make a wise choice or make the best choice that you can. All right, so how does it fit with you? I want you to turn to a neighbor right now and answer this question, okay? You're going to grab what we're talking about, this whole idea of relying on God, and here's the question for you. What decisions are you currently facing that you need to rely on God about? Okay, is there a decision that you're facing this week or this month that you need to rely on God about? So I'm going to give you like 2 minutes. Turn to your neighbor, somebody next to you, and just say, hey, you know what? I've been thinking about this, and it would probably be good if I got God's advice or his wisdom on this. All right, again, the question is, what decisions are you currently facing that you need to rely on God about? All right, as you wrap that up, you don't need to answer this next one, but here's just another one to think about. What are some of the consequences of not yielding to God? What are some consequences of not yielding to God? Well, I think you end up in a lot of trouble. You end up screwing up your life. You end up messing up you know, what God intended. So I think we need to be more cautious in our decision making. All right, so as I close, I want to just remind you of these things. So rely on God. Can you just say that with me one time just because I want you to stick in your head? Everybody say, rely on God.
Rely on God.
Cool. What did Larry talk about Sunday? What was Sunday about? I don't know. Something about relying on God. Yes. Okay, that's it. If you go to cell group, you're like, I have no idea. I wasn't there. All right, rely on God. That's it. All right, rethink independence, express humility, listen, and yield to God. That's it. And I know it's not easy to do, but it's essential that we live lives deeply dependent on God, especially in our daily decision making. All right, so here's the challenge. As you go home and you think about it this week, and you're at work or you're on the field or you're hanging out with friends, I want you to just pick an area of your life right now. Maybe it was that something that you just shared with your neighbor. Pick one area and say, you know what? In this one area or this one decision, I really want to surrender it to God. And then, you know, ask a friend to check in with you about it. And say, hey, you know what? A week from now, hey, how did that go? Or how is that going? A lot of times decisions aren't just over. So they have, you know, they can be ongoing or have continual effect. But think about that. To surrender your desires, your heart, your will to what God would have you do. All right, would you pray with me? Jesus, it is really hard sometimes to lean on you, to rely on you, to trust you. And a lot of times we fall short or we fail or we stumble and we just don't do it. We try to do it ourselves. God, forgive us. Forgive us for trying to be independent of you. God, would you help us to lean hard and lean into you this week? God, we lift up our hearts to you. And even these decisions that people were talking about, God, we want to lift those up to you right now too. Would you give everyone here wisdom and direction and guidance about the choices in their life? Hey God, would you help us to rely on you in the tough stuff when it doesn't make sense, when we're hurt and frustrated and depressed and mad, and when we thought we were trying to do it right and we just can't seem to make our way? Would you help us not to bail? Help us not to give up on trusting you and leaning on you? God, guide us through this minefield of life that we might find you on the other side. In Jesus' name, amen.